We not much more clothe you, O men of little faith? Therefore do not be anxious, saying, What shall we eat? Or what shall we drink? Or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek all of these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. But seek first the kingdom and God's righteousness, and all of these things shall be yours as well. Therefore do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Let today's own trouble be sufficient for the day. So we definitely have some scriptural injunctions to watch out for stress. I wanted to mention a book. I did not have any books brought to the bookstore because this one is one of those big, thick encyclopedia type books that I think is better to get from the library. The book is called The Wellness Book, A Comprehensive Guide to Maintaining Health and Treating Stress-Related Illness by Herbert Benson and Eileen Stewart. And it's relatively recent. I believe it's 1992. When I knew I was going to be giving this series here at Holden, I went to our county library. I went to the one of the major books, secular bookstores, and I went to a major Christian bookstore, and I found a bunch of garbage. This book is certainly not perfect, but it has a couple of things. One is it doesn't get way off in left field. It's pretty reasonable. I think it's something that people can be in touch with. It's very practical. They give little stories about individuals that they've worked with and how they integrated some stress management into their lives, and also some little practical exercises. We may try one or two of those here today. First thing that this book mentions is the whole idea that there's a connection between what's going on up here in our minds and what's going on in our bodies. And I think that starting back with the first century of the Christian era and a group of people called the Gnostics, we have had a tendency in the Western world to say the mind and thinking are good and the body and the processes related to the body are bad in some fashion. It's called dualism. And clearly, the God of our scriptures is not a dualist. God created the world. The world is good. He talks about tilling and caring for it, but it also talks about caring for ourselves and for each other. Let's think about some phrases that you might hear someone say that might indicate how we unconsciously realize that connection. I'm thinking of, oh, that person is such a pain in the neck. Or
stressed out.
Okay, stressed out. Have you ever heard anybody say, this project's going to give me an ulcer?
Yeah.
Can you think of any others like that?
Your body, you talk about body and brain, you can actually give yourself a headache.
Okay. Headaches are probably one of the best known.
Being overstressed from whether thought, or you can turn around and mistreat your body and give yourself a headache.
Okay.
What you eat, for example.
Okay. And so sometimes when we're feeling stressed, we do things that aren't healthy for our bodies, such as drinking too much alcohol, smoking cigarettes, eating too much
coffee,
drinking too much coffee, not getting enough sleep, not getting enough exercise. We may abuse our bodies. I'm going to take just a break here, tape people, and talk to these children. Kids.
Your kid, huh?
And their friends. Okay. So what is stress? Can you think of a way to define stress?
Well, to me, stress is tension.
Okay. We're talking about stress. In fact, right at the moment, we're defining stress. Tension.
For private lesson.
I get just a private session.
More the merrier. I'm expecting a couple more people. Other things that you might think of that might help us define stress?
I don't know.
What are some of the characteristics that make a situation stressful?
Well, work can be one, disagreement can be one. Your opinion, somebody else's aren't the same, so that can be.
Too many people.
Family, relationship would be one.
So conflict again?
Yeah.
Too much. Stress is sort of a way of saying this seems overwhelming.
That's probably very true. We don't want to admit it, but it's probably very true.
Okay.
That we're overwhelmed with something.
Okay.
We're trying to be sane.
Okay, what are the good aspects of stress? Why did our bodies get built to have that kind of a response? What's it appropriate to be stressful about?
Well, you're asking two questions. What's appropriate and what do you learn from it, I think is what you're saying.
Okay. I'm more interested right now in, well, first of all, maybe we should talk about what happens to our bodies when we feel stressed.
Well, you could be upset stomach,
okay.
Sweaty, a whole lot of depending on the person, you know.
Okay.
Body changes, yeah.
Okay, well, so we sweat. Okay, what happens to your heart?
Speeds up.
Okay, so an increased heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
Just general poor health.
Okay, let's talk about acute stress right now. Let's set a scenario. What might be acutely very stressful? I think the thing I can think of first is either a near-miss auto accident or an auto accident. You been in an auto accident?
Yep.
Or come close
very
to one?
Stressful.
Okay.
Very
okay.
Much.
So what your heart rate goes up. What else?
I sweat a lot.
Okay. Sweat. You ever gotten shaky?
Yeah, you get real hyper.
Okay.
Everything overworks.
Okay. So hypervigilance, you're just kind of... I don't spell, but basically you're all alert, so a hyper alertness. What happens to your breathing?
You hyperventilate.
Okay. And how much energy are you using? How much are you burning?
I would say a lot.
Okay. Increased metabolism.
Losing weight by it.
Well, why don't you lose any weight by it?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because one of our most common responses to chronic stress is to eat too much.
Well, you don't eat at all, but still.
Okay. But inappropriate weight changes happen because our response to that increased metabolism is either to shut down or markedly overcompensate. This is acute stress. Acute stress is what allows you to lift that car off the child that it rolled over. It's what allows you to outrun the freight train coming down the track. It's what allows you to get away from that bear you met on the trail to Heart Lake. Acute stress, we call that the flight or fight response. Can be very useful if what you're dealing with is a physical threat. In our modern society with weapons, etc., I'm not sure you should use that response to the guy that jumps in the dark alley. But if you're out in the wilderness and have problems with an animal, or you're you slide off the trail, etc. If something physically threatening is happening to you, especially in the natural world, this response can be life-saving or can save someone else. You hear about these people that rescue someone from a burning building, and afterwards they say, I don't know how I did that.
Right.
And it's because you do get increased strength from all of this increased heart rate, increased metabolism, increased respirations, increased muscular tone. But this is something that we can only sustain acutely. And that's where it does some good. So rescuing someone from a burning building, fighting off a bear, those acute changes are very helpful. What kind of stresses do we have in modern society? Can you think of some of the things that...
I like freeway driving, for instance.
Okay.
I think also work is more stressful today than it used to be because of more demands on them.
Okay.
More competition.
Okay.
Or a job.
All right. So competition.
I would think family also, with children in today's society, drugs and all that.
Okay. So some of those outside pressures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or maybe the lack of support. Many of us don't have grandma and grandpa and brothers and sisters around.
Well, seeing a family of children, sometimes father and mother don't always agree, so it becomes a form of stress, I think, there anyway.
We don't have a lot of societal support for families either,
right?
For keeping families together. So a lack of extended family, a lack of societal support for families can make families
stressful.
Is that why I think
the church is so good? It takes away, seems like a church, you can leave some of your tension at church.
Okay.
For some unknown reason, it takes it away.
Okay. I think we should get into that as time goes on in this. But let's talk about some of these things. Dan, you think of anything else that you think of as stressful?
You've covered a goodly number of them, Jenny. The list is...
Okay.
Let's see, I'm sure there are others. So.
Probably the most stressful thing we have in our lives right now is worry about
the future.
And can you think of some of the future things you might worry about?
Ecology.
Okay, ecology.
Family.
Family.
Work.
Okay, retirement maybe?
Yeah.
Are these things acute stresses? Or are they chronic?
Really, very can be fairly acute, but
okay. So that one's acute and chronic. How about the rest of these?
Work sometimes can be fairly acute, but
yeah.
Okay.
Depending on where you put your job in, what kind of boss you got, that sort of thing.
Okay. But
most of them are probably chronic. But
most of these are chronic. What happens when you have these bodily changes that then last for a long time? What do we get then?
Oh, it has an effect on your health.
Okay. And what kinds of effects might it have on our health? We talked about disordered eating patterns.
Well, I can tell you it can affect your heart tremendously.
Okay. And heart disease, high blood pressure, ulcers, headaches, we talked about those earlier. Okay, so basically chronic state of stressfulness can lead to some significant health problems. Besides which, do you like the way it feels?
I don't.
Okay. So we need to find out what to do with these things that happen to us that we need occasionally. They're not bad. To feel stressed when something external is threatening you is very appropriate. It gets you ready to deal with it. But how well do we deal with the ecology, our families, retirement, by worry?
We don't.
Okay. Scripture tells us you can't turn one hair of your head from white to black by worrying about it. And you can't add an hour to your life. In fact, you can probably take one away. So what we have to do is decide what can we do with the stress besides just continue to live with it and feel stressed out. First of all, I think we've talked about it a little bit, but let's be a little bit more systematic about what does it feel like when you are feeling stressed? I know you mentioned tension. What does that feel like? Tell me about the body sensations that tell you that you're feeling tense.
Well, I don't know how it affects other people, but you can feel your heart pick up beats.
Okay.
You can feel your hands sometimes shake.
Okay, so palpitations, feeling your heartbeat unusually strongly.
That changes in age, too, because like 20 years ago compared to myself now, it's changed.
In what way?
Like, you get nervous and shake more now.
You shake more now than you did before.
Never used to bother me. My heart would pick up. That's why I had to have heart surgery.
Okay.
Years ago, but I never noticed it otherwise. Today, okay. I notice it. And my heart not only beats a little faster, but I also notice it in the rest of my body.
Okay. Anybody ever get sweaty?
Yeah, I think you do.
I can usually tell when I've got sweaty palms. Headaches?
Sometimes. Yeah. I think it depends if you're alert. You know, some people get headaches more than other people. So if you was allergic to having headaches all the time, that would probably bring them on a lot quicker.
Stiff neck. What else do you feel when you've had a stressful day? Any other thoughts?
Well, tired.
Your energy level is down.
Okay.
Yeah, tired.
Takes an incredible amount of energy.
Yes.
To worry.
Yes.
You use up a tremendous amount of strength. You might have something else you'd like to do with. Okay. Now, what we need to look at is what can we do when we're feeling this way? I think the first thing is get in touch with how you feel.
Well, I think the answer that I work with, I don't want to think bother you anymore.
Okay.
But once they do, it's not good anymore. I mean, I can tell, and it does eat some of these things.
Okay.
But
so
I try to.
This whole session is going to be about how to do that.
Just let it roll off your.
Okay.
You change? What's that? There's an old saying. If you can't change it, why worry about it? Or something to that effect.
Okay. So, what can we do? Well, we can let it roll off. That's sometimes easier said than done.
Yeah, what, very, that's true.
Okay. What are some of the things that we do to try to manage stress?
Well, you have to work at that very hard to...
Okay.
Not let... Because somebody, for instance, disagrees with you.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm right. I know I'm right.
Uh-huh.
But you're also all right. Now, what are we going to gain by arguing about it? Nothing. Because
so,
you're still going to think you're right, and I am too, when we're all done.
So what are you going to do? How are you going to do that? What are you going to do when people disagree with you?
I just don't put a bottom in.
Okay.
You have your opinion, I have mine.
Okay.
There you go. And most of this works better than it used to for me, but still, I have problems once in a while.
So let disagreements rest. Don't insist that you have to come to agreement before you let go of it. Okay, what else do you do when you're feeling stressed out? How do you help yourself cope? We've just talked about some of the situations in which we feel stressed, what it feels like in our bodies to feel stressed.
I know all about that.
Yeah, and now we're trying to talk about
it. I think another thing that helps you is if you can get oxygen.
Okay.
I think somehow stress has a way of cutting off oxygen to you.
Okay, and what do you do to get oxygen?
Well, to me, you just breathe deep.
Okay.
You know,
so deep breathing.
I really do think that has an effect on how.
Okay. Yeah.
In real estate, there's a lot of stress. And there are times when I want to cry because it's so bad.
Okay.
So I learned to go somewhere and just cry a little.
Okay.
It hurt.
So cry in private.
Well, that's what they say, if a person, you know, through some.
Sometimes I want to scream too. I've done that.
Okay.
I had a really stressful situation with my ex-son-in-law, and I said, I'm so angry with him, I want to scream, and then I said to myself, why shouldn't you scream?
Uh-huh.
So I went into my bedroom, closed the door, I was alone in the house, and I had just screamed, and I felt great after.
Okay.
I felt really great.
But that's a release of tension.
Sure.
I think.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
And crying can be too. And
yeah,
I think,
the way of
especially in our culture, it's somewhat gender specific, that women cry and men scream,
yeah,
and throw things and hit walls and things of that sort. I think we have to recognize that as long as we are not using that behavior to manipulate someone else or in a fashion that hurts someone else, that it's very appropriate. Men who run around socking holes in walls are being inappropriate. People who go to the gym and sock punching bags are doing fine. Women who cry in front of partners to get partners to capitulate are being manipulative. Women who cry because it releases tension and they feel better can be doing themselves a big favor.
And their partner too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't mean that you have to cry in private as long as it's recognized that this is me coping with my stress, not you are the person who made me do this and that's bad and so you ought to change.
Yeah.
Okay, so some real good things. Sometimes some of them are a little bit harder than others to do. I promised myself I wasn't going to stand up on the board today so I can look at my notes. Let's do a little exercise right now because we're going to get into how to take a little mini vacation, how to take a break, how to get your stress level down when you recognize it's high. First, we said at the top, we've got to get in touch with it. We've got to know that we're feeling stressed. I'd like you to just take a minute and close your eyes and just get in touch with what you're feeling. Okay, I gave you 60 long seconds. Now, is there ever a time in your day where you can't take 1 minute? So, how long did that feel like it was to you?
Well, 5 minutes.
With 60 seconds with my watch. I got to keep my eyes open. What did you feel when you closed your eyes? What did you notice?
Slightly calmer.
Okay. Okay, calmer with your eyes closed.
Yeah.
Anybody have any, notice any parts of their bodies or any functions of their bodies? Was there anything that drew your attention?
I don't quite follow.
Okay. What was your body like?
Well, your body will relax when you do that.
Okay.
That's what you're saying.
Okay. What does that mean? What does it mean to you to be more relaxed? What felt different?
Well, your whole function slows down, really.
Okay.
From the brain and your body, it all works.
Okay. So you were slower.
I think so.
Okay. What else? Anyone else?
I started up here.
Okay.
So mine wasn't in sudden. It was
okay.
More gradual relaxing.
Okay. Diane demonstrated that her hand was up above her head and gradually during the minute came down to about waist level.
Mm-hmm.
You felt more grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyone else?
I feel like I'm in limbo.
Okay. What does that feel like?
Well, just nothing. You know, just kind of, you know.
Okay. So you kind of let go of the busyness.
But still, you know.
You know what's going on, but I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But it does take the tension off if you just stop.
Okay. Okay. Anyone notice their breathing?
Okay. It might be so dumb, I don't think I noticed that.
Okay, okay. One of the things that's really been suggested, and this book makes a big deal out of it, but it's certainly true in many different programs to promote release of tension. This time I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Well, first of all, let's just talk about it. I want you to put your hand just below your waist. Get in a comfortable position with your feet uncrossed. Doesn't matter whether you're sitting up or sitting back. Put your hand down here, and with your eyes closed, we're going to do about 30 seconds of taking a big breath with your belly, slowly in and slowly letting it out. And pay attention to your breathing and pay attention to the muscles in your shoulders. So I'll have you do that right now. Okay. What did that feel like?
Feel relaxed into me.
What were your shoulders like when you started that?
I didn't notice any difference up there.
Okay, okay. What were your shoulders like to begin with?
Relaxed.
Okay. Well, can't expect to get more relaxed than relaxed.
No.
The point to this is that there's something fairly simple that we can do that will help us to calm down. You don't even have to close your eyes if that's not something that you can socially do at the moment. But even, have you ever gotten yourself ready for something that was going to be difficult by saying, okay, I'm going to take a big deep breath, and it helped. Be deliberate about that in situations that are stressful. 3 deep breaths, make them slow or you'll get dizzy, but the relaxation response. Remember we had something up there about increased heart rate, increased muscle tone, increased metabolism, all this revving up. The relaxation response is exactly the opposite of that. Have you ever watched about a 3-year-old child fall asleep? Diane's laughing. What does a 3-year-old look like when they fall asleep?
Absolute relaxation.
Okay. Or especially a 3-year-old that's almost asleep, the eyes roll back, the muscles get all wobbly. Okay. So we're born knowing how to relax. We learn not to relax. So the relaxation response is going to have a decreased heart rate, decreased respirations. They're often more even. Decreased muscle tone. Decreased vigilance. Do you know what I mean when I say vigilance?
Awareness.
Not necessarily. Vigilance is the I've got to know everything around me because something might be going wrong. Awareness, I may be very aware of those leaves rustling outside or the sound of the brook or the sound of the children playing out there. For me right now, that those children playing might be vigilance because it's my kid making all the noise. But for someone who just says, oh, there are children playing outside, vigilance is the constant evaluation of threat as opposed to being simply aware of surroundings. Do you ever feel threatened? Okay. What kinds of things in our daily lives do we feel threatened by?
Traffic.
Okay. So vigilance, I think first we have to see ourselves as having vigilance. Traffic, certainly. That's why I deal a lot with obstetric patients and preterm labor. And they're totally amazed when I say, one of the first things I'm going to take away from you is driving. You cannot drive. And they kind of look at me like, oh, why? Because it's so stressful. Oh, it's not stressful. Like, heck, it's not stressful.
Has to be.
Okay. Yeah, because you constantly have to be alert. You have to watch out for danger. Mm-hmm. The faster you drive, the wider your circle of looking for danger has to be. What else are we vigilant about? That's a physical threat, but probably more subtle and more pervasive in our society are the emotional threats. What are we looking for? What are we on the lookout for?
Trouble, usually.
Okay. Be a little bit more specific.
Oh, you know, this work situations that you're coping with.
You ever watching out for disapproval? Mm-hmm. You know, do I look right? Do I care what I look like unless I'm standing in front of a mirror? What I care about is, will somebody disapprove of me as I'm doing that? Is it the family stresses we talked about earlier? Isn't that basically disapproval? Not like me? Boss? You know, seldom these days are we worried. Now, there may be some occupations, bridge workers or linemen or something, where that vigilance may have to do with physical hazards. In my work, unless I've got a needle in my hand, I don't have any physical hazards. But there's a constant, will I screw up? Will I do something wrong? Will somebody not like me? Will I say something that might hurt someone? So the constant vigilance to keep from goofing up, to keep from having people disapprove of us. Okay. Relaxation response includes decrease in vigilance, decrease in worry about the world around us and how it's going to affect us and how we're going to affect it. Okay. There are many ways to try to remind ourselves to stop being so hypervigilant and or stressed and to relax. But there are several techniques that people use specifically to remind themselves to set off that relaxation response. We talked about some things we do, but that maybe are even unconscious. What are some of the ways that you've heard of to specifically try to reach that more relaxed state?
We have to take time out for yourself.
Okay. Time out.
Exercise is very good.
Yeah, okay, excellent. Okay.
Breathing exercise.
Okay. I think they often teach those to heart patients in the recovery phase.
But it's something you got to learn.
Oh, absolutely.
From a type A individual to fall into that bracket, you got to work at it.
Okay. Anything else?
I like to, if I'm struggling with something, I like to walk to a nearby restaurant and have breakfast alone and take a book, I mean a notebook, and write what's bothering me. And just let that waitress wait on me. And then when that's done, I really usually feel a lot better.
Okay. So writing, journaling.
And just taking the time.
Okay. So both the time out and the articulating your thoughts on paper. This is a Christian retreat center. Anybody else got some ideas from that?
Prayer a lot of times is really
good. Okay. Prayer. Meditation. Now, I grew up in the 60s when meditation was sort of associated with contemplating your navel with a guru from some country in Asia. But meditation is certainly a phenomenon that is not associated with a particular religion.
Explain meditation.
Okay. I think prayer and meditation can be the same. Meditation tends to be more of a quieting and not, prayer may or may not be a simple being attuned with and waiting for God, but it may be more of a, you know, God, I'm worried about this, help me figure this out, take care of this person, take care of that person. It can be a very, very active thing. Meditation tends to be more of a quieting.
You serve alone with your thoughts and just,
yeah, but that's what I'm trying to get at, is your thoughts, and sometimes thoughts can upset you.
Okay.
For an example that I use, like if I have to get up tonight, if I can stay half asleep, go back to bed, well, I'll go to sleep right now.
Uh-huh.
If I get thinking about something,
okay,
I won't go back to sleep for an hour maybe.
Okay. And
so
here's,
that's kind of why I...
Okay. Here's a place that something like meditation might be helpful, because meditation is a quieting, usually involves a repetitious, of a word or action. Such as that deep breathing that we were talking about earlier. I think in the 60s the big word was om for some reason, but you know, Christians may meditate. Frankly, probably the Catholic rosary is a form of meditation. It's a fairly mechanical one, but simply repeating that prayer over and over and over again.
Well, it's how you use
that. Right, absolutely. You know, whether if you're using it as a, you know, tick off the number that you've done, because you get brownie points for each one, that's not meditation. But if you use it as a quieting and becoming in tune with God, some people will simply do the deep breathing like we practiced and simply try to empty their mind of thoughts. The repeating of a word or a phrase can sometimes help keep out those extraneous thoughts, repeating, you know, the Lord is good, or praise God, or peace, or, you know, in Eastern thought they call that your mantra, the thing that you say. Major purpose there is to give you some kind of a positive thought. Have you ever been in a very quiet room and you start to hear the faucet drip, and the rain on the roof, and the dog barking down the street, because something fills the quiet. Basically, a meditation word fills the quiet with something you want it filled with, such as peace or thoughts of God or whatever it is you want to do. The other part of it is this is the way I saw them describe it, and I think it's a good phrase, a passive disregard for intrusive thoughts. So if you're meditating and you think, oh gosh, did I lock the front door? Either you stop your meditation and check the front door because you're not going to let go of that, or you say,
who cares?
Yeah, let it go. Whether it's let it go or who cares or whatever, or oh gosh, tomorrow I've got to remember to take the garbage out. Let go. It's not meditation if you're writing a list to do tomorrow or when you're done meditating. Some people find that, just like anything else, practice is helpful. Oftentimes people who are learning to allow themselves to relax need to set aside a particular time to practice meditation once or twice a day for 10 to 20 minutes. Some people find that even once they learn that response, it's so refreshing to them that they want to do it regularly. Others may find that once they've learned how to do it, they can simply call that response up when they need it. You know, I'm 5 minutes late for a meeting, I'm stuck in traffic, I'm hanging onto the wheel, and am I going to make it? Is it going to make any difference whether I'm uptight? To take those deep breaths, to to do whatever it takes for you to break into that relaxation. We talked.
Jane, I'm wondering if so. I like to kind of sitting at my desk and kind of working away very, very diligently at a computer program and kind of stuck and trying to figure out, you know, just really puzzled by it. A lot of times it's real helpful to just, you know, get up, go away, go downstairs, get a donut or something, you know, something like that. And then think of, you know, about the kids who are just, you know, entirely different and come back, you know, 10 or 15 months later and surprisingly there'll be an entirely new perspective or, you know, sure. things that you haven't been consciously even thinking about. But a lot of times there are ideas that,
certainly, that creativity improves by getting out of your rut and relaxing. And one, as Dan described, he didn't have to physically relax. He had to change the scene. I think the thing that I'm trying to say here is not that deep breathing or meditating is the only one to reach relaxation, but it's a way that can be used under almost any circumstances. Yeah?
Just a little aside, something that helps me when I get in a situation like you're describing, mm-hmm. I've got to be at a certain place at a certain time and there's no way I can make it. I say to myself, a year from now, it's not going to make any difference.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, it sort of gives you a little perspective and mm-hmm. a little way out.
Okay. And that's absolutely important. What are the benefits of taking that kind of an attitude or whatever it takes to get into that more relaxed state? We talked about some of the bad effects of being constantly stressed. What are some of the good effects of being able to relax?
Hopefully your blood pressure will go down.
Okay.
Tremendously good.
Okay. So lowered blood pressure, improved health in many ways. We're talking physical health there.
Yeah.
What else? I think Dan talked about being stuck.
Mental health.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I say mental health.
Okay. Increased mental health. Can you be more specific? What will be better about your mental health?
You feel better about yourself.
Okay.
In your situation. But.
Increased self-esteem.
Less worry.
Okay. Decreased worry. We talked a little bit about creativity. Some of us don't think of ourselves as being creative, but we're always creative. We're always finding new ways to go about what needs to be done. Creativity. There we go. I would say increased efficiency. I think there's some fairly good evidence. Unfortunately, I don't think it gives me increased spelling.
Another thing that'll do is less accidents. In other
okay.
words, a hypo person, what I call hypotension, more chance of an accident than one that's more relaxed.
Absolutely. Someone who is busy worrying about the job or the home or something is not as vigilant about those physical hazards. Whether they stick their hand in a machine, whether they check to see who's coming up to that stoplight. Absolutely. People who are either stressed or under the influence of drugs are much more prone to accidents than people who are awake, alert, mm-hmm. and calm. Okay. So some really...
This may be slightly off the topic. Where does alcohol fit into stress? Some people deal with stress with alcohol, and that's their chosen approach.
The problem with that is that the effects of alcohol create other stresses.
They're trying to deal with stress by drinking, and that's not the answer.
No, because the problem is that alcohol is a depressant. And while it anesthetizes you for a while, as you come out of the alcohol, you feel even worse. And it's a vicious cycle. Plus the fact that it disinhibits control and therefore you're more likely to get yourself into trouble for the future. So, and that's a problem with all addictive substances, is that while it may be a short-term numbing of the concern that caused you to go for it, it in itself creates more stressful situations. That does not mean that every time someone drinks a drink of alcohol, they're going to have that, but that if they are drinking to get away from problems, that's very likely to occur. So we talked a little bit about some of the benefits of being able to release chronic tension to achieve relaxation. We've talked mostly about what to do with stress once you've got it. Let's talk just a little bit about what I call the B attitudes. That's not an original concept. What are, and I think that several people have mentioned, my spelling. What are...
Looked all right to me. I can't spell anyway.
What are some of the attitudes or approaches to life that we can take as Christians that may help us keep from getting stressed out in the first place? Much better to prevent it than to deal with it. We've talked about how to get our bodies and our minds more relaxed when we're already uptight. How do we keep from doing that?
Well, it helps to understand what you can control and what you can't control.
Okay, the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, you know, help me to do something about the things I can and let go of the things I can and to know the wisdom to know the difference between them.
That's a prayer like of the AA group has that.
The Serenity Prayer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. To know the difference. What okay. I can do something about, what I can't do nothing about anyway.
Okay, so let go of things we can't control. Can you list some things that we try to control sometimes that we really can't?
What our grown-up children do.
Okay. You even your not-so-grown-up children.
Yeah, all become teenagers, what they're going to do.
Yeah.
You think about that, you do try to control them. Won't all parents do
okay.
to one degree or another?
Okay.
And it don't work all the time.
Okay.
You can steer, but that's about all.
Okay. So not trying to control our kids. That does wonders for their self-esteem, too.
Yeah.
Who else? What else can't you control?
Well, weather, you want to say weather, like if I'm going to picnic tomorrow and it decides to rain, there's not much you can do about it.
Okay, okay. The economy.
Buzz me up.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Herzegovina, Johnny, you already spelled that one, but...
Thanks, Dad. World politics. Notice I said world politics. There's a lot you can do about local situations. Okay. Does that mean we're not concerned about them? Does it mean you're not concerned about your children?
No, I don't think it
does. Right. But you don't try to control them. And there's a big difference. What about, we talked about things we can't control. What about be in control of self? When do you feel out of control? What? Have you ever said, you make me so mad? Okay. Who's in charge of whether you're mad or not?
You are.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay.
You don't think so at the time you say it, but you really are.
That person who's saying something you don't like or doing something you don't like isn't inside your skin, isn't inside my skin. That also means that we not automatically accept others' appraisals. How often have you felt guilty about something because somebody really put a guilt trip on you and you went home and said,
have any responsibility for that, and why the heck do I feel guilty about that? I see a couple nodding there. Can you think of examples?
Yeah, at church.
Okay. And this works both ways. We have to be careful not to accept others' appraisals of what we ought to do or what we are like, but we also have to be careful not to do it to others.
That's right. You really have to be aware of your boundaries and other people's boundaries.
That's a good way to put it.
Boundaries or abilities?
Well, boundaries have to do... It's really interesting. You always sense when someone has crossed a boundary. And sometimes you'll allow them to and you become Miss Doormat, you know, or Mr. Doormat. Women are more guilty of that than men are.
Well, I think that both genders can be guilty. I think women have a tendency to accept a lot of junk.
Mm-hmm.
In our society, and this is certainly not true of every man, I think men have had a tendency to project and walk into other people's space,
mm-hmm.
and try to control people. I know I have a boss who has the longer I've been with him, the more I recognize that he tries to walk in and run people's ideas. And I finally had to say, wait a minute,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't do that to me. Persuade me. Don't make me think your way. Give me some facts and let me decide for myself if I'm going to believe that the world is the way you think it is. But there are definitely powerful people tend to be people who try to think for other people. So be aware of boundaries. Think for yourself. Listen to other people's ideas. There's lots of good ideas out there. But you decide if those ideas make sense to you, because you have the responsibility and control over what you think. Don't accept what other people think as being the right answer. Let's think a minute about what... We talked a while back about self-esteem, and I think that self-esteem has a lot to do with boundaries, especially for women. And I think it does for men. Many men who try to control, and I see this in family conflicts.
Would it be more for women than men?
I think it's true for both, but as I said, I think in our culture, women accept other people's judgments of them to their detriment.
What I see in that is like when I, at my age, and when I grew up, Dad was the boss. I mean, that's just the way it was. And Mom did the housework and that thing. And as you grow up, there's been a change in that where they're partners, women and men are more partners.
Uh-huh.
And in my lifetime, I've had to change the way Dad, our fathers, did things to the way the new custom has become. And I have no problem with people doing things together, but I think that's part of that.
Change is always hard.
Say another generation down the road, I think you will see more men and women talking or communicating, sharing, doing dishes. Like my grandkids, they changed diapers.
Uh-huh.
They didn't do that. My dad didn't do that. That's woman's work. In other words,
sure.
I'm not trying to be smart.
Sure.
I'm just saying that was woman's work. In
sure.
Things
so
are changing now.
We've broken down stereotypes.
Yes.
I think
they're partners now.
That's the ideal, and that
which
is something
good,
that is happening that is good. But
what
that also says is that both genders are going to have the same problems.
We have to give...
Trying to control others versus allowing others to control us. I think Diane made a very important point that the problem is boundaries. It's not my boundary is here, it's not my boundary is on the other side of you, my boundary is in between us.
See, as you see more women in corporate jobs,
mm-hmm.
and this sort of thing, then you will see that boundary thing happening both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I brought out that stereotype picture only so that we would be aware of the fact that in our society it often happens this way, but it doesn't always. I have certainly seen women violate men's boundaries badly, be very domineering. I've seen men who are guilt-tripped up the wazoo too. Traditionally, that has been more one direction than the other. So we talked about letting go, and two other things besides this whole idea of boundaries and control that I wanted to be sure and get out. One is the same thing that our scripture passage at the very beginning talked about, and that is living in the present. When was the last time that you were in a situation where you didn't have the next 5 minutes under control? I see someone shaking her head.
I guess I could say never.
Okay.
Maybe. I feel like I have it under. I kind of know what I'm going to do the next 5 minutes.
Okay.
Now you're going to say, what are you going to do this afternoon? Mm-hmm. I have thoughts, but that doesn't mean I'm going to do
it. Sure. But when we talk about those threats and worries, we're almost always talking into the future. And with the exception of a car accident or Dan knows my story that I won't tell about a panic call I got from the hospital and wound up having to do something that I had been told I wasn't allowed to do, but there was no one else to do it, and I, you know, was kind of like, okay, in the next 3 minutes you're going to do this. But those kinds of stresses where we're having to really think about whether we can accomplish the task of the next minute or two is extremely rare. That fire, that car accident, very, very rare. Living primarily in the present, and that doesn't mean with disregard for the future, but it's usually pretty clear what you've got to do next. And it may be prudent to have a general plan for the future, but the worry, the only thing worth worrying about is the thing that you really have to get done right now. At least thinking about whether we're staying present focused. The present is the only thing I can change. And
you can somewhat change the future. The actions of the present affect the future, and
you
have some possible control of part of it.
But the point is that you spend your energy on how you can make those changes now, not worrying about, am I going to be able to get this done next week? The past, this also talks about regrets. What kind of regrets are good?
When you've done something wrong.
Okay. What is the only useful purpose of regretting?
Learning.
To learn.
Okay. The only purpose of regret is to change your future behavior. You don't change your future behavior by saying, oh, I'm so bad, I'm such a terrible person, oh, I'm bad. You say, wait a minute, that wasn't the right thing to do. Next time I'm in that situation, I'll do this instead. To look at the past as learning, not as character defamation. Do you ever browbeat yourself? Oh gosh, how could I have been such a terrible person? How could I have ever been so stupid? Anybody resonate with that one? Okay. That's what I'm talking about, is to give up. Now, how have we institutionalized that in the church?
With the confession?
Okay. Confession and forgiveness. Do you forgive yourself when you screw up? Our theology says if we confess our sins, God, who is faithful and just, will forgive our sins and remove all of our iniquities. Do we let go of them? The point here is that we have to not only forgive others, we have to accept forgiveness and move on and forgive ourselves. And my husband, who's sitting here, can certainly say that I'm not one of the world's best people at doing this. I tend to fuss about the future. And, oh gosh, what will I do if this happens? What will I do if that happens? What will I do if the next thing happens? But that's really non-productive time. I could be doing something about the future if I wasn't sitting around worrying about the future. So living in the present, we talked about being responsible only for ourselves, but being in control of ourselves. And the last one I really wanted to emphasize here was self-esteem. What does that mean? It's kind of a buzzword these days. What is self-esteem?
You have some value.
Okay. Okay. Any other thoughts?
It's very important to God.
Okay. Okay. I think one of the things that our society has managed to figure out is that self-esteem seems to be at an all-time low and that we ought to do something about it. And I think one of the things that we have as Christians that we really need to grab a hold of and focus on is we don't get our self-esteem from doing some program out of a book or for being good people.